There's a kick. It is up. It is no good. No one missed.
I think we got a heck of a shot of winning. We can beat anybody in the world, and I think we're going to win next Sunday.
Eli Manning stays on his feet, airs it out down the field. It is caught by Tyree.
For all you non-believers, disrespect us, talk crap about the defense like we ain't the third best defense in the league.
See you in Pittsburgh.
Can't wait.
Fitzpatrick. Enzo. Eric Decker holds it in. The Jets win in overtime.
And the New York Giants, given the last rites by many in December, are the Super Bowl champs in February.
This is NFL Friday, going long on all news, reaction, and game picks for the Giants, Jets, and across the NFL on WFUV Sports.
And welcome in to NFL Friday. My name is Brendan Shorey, and I am joined today by Bradley Byrne and Thomas Tisdale. Trey Rodriguez is behind the glass and might even join us on air at some point. Fellas, kind of an odd time right now for football. We're seeing a lot of roster cuts. We're seeing fifth-year options picked up, contracts restructured, trade rumors, but that's not what we're here for. A little thing called the NFL Draft happened last weekend, Thursday night, Friday night, Saturday all day. We're going to dive into that in a minute and give it a little recap. But before we do, Bradley Thomas, how are we doing today?
Doing pretty good. Excited to go home on Tuesday and hopefully get finals out of the way. Just got to finish up a few more papers, but I'm looking forward to summer, you know?
Yeah, last day of classes was yesterday, so feeling pretty good. But I'm here until the last possible day you can be here. I'm here until...
You have a final on the 12th.
On the 12th, and it's the most ridiculous thing and the most frustrating thing ever. But, you know, that's just how it is. So at least the weather's nice so I can go outside and not just, like, want to die. So otherwise, feeling pretty good.
I was going to say, it's beautiful in the Bronx, especially this weekend. Take advantage of these few days off. But we're not here to talk about the weather. We're here to talk about football. We're here to talk about the NFL draft. And to start, I was thinking we'd do a little round one recap, kind of round out that top 10. We'll go through that. Pick number one, Cam Ward to the Titans. And the second pick, the Jags traded up with the Browns to take Travis Hunter. Third pick, the Giants took Abdul Carter. And then Will Campbell to the Pats. Mason Graham to the Browns with that pick they traded down for. Ashton Jeanty to the Raiders. Armon Membu to the Jets. Tet McMillan to the Panthers, Kelvin Banks to the Saints, and to round out that top 10, Colston Loveland to the Bears. But I know Trey's back there itching to hop in and talk about Travis Hunter. Cam Ward was the consensus number one pick. I don't think we need to dive too much into that. But the Jaguars trading up into that second spot for Travis Hunter, a trade that had apparently been in place since April 7th with one caveat. If Cam Ward fell past the Titans, the trade was off the table. He didn't. The trade happened. The Jaguars gave up a lot of picks, a lot of draft capital to go and get their guy. What do you guys think of that move?
I don't. If I'm a Jaguars fan, I don't really care how much they gave up. I think Travis Hunter is a generational talent, and I think the Jaguars honestly stole him from the Browns. That might be a little bit of a hot take to some, but I think Travis Hunter, whether he plays both sides of the ball, is still up in the air in question, but regardless, I think Jaguars fans should be very happy. They got a really, really good player for years to come.
Yeah, if he only played cornerback or if he only played wide receiver, he'd still be a top 10 draft pick in this year's draft. But then when you factor in that he plays both sides of the ball, he's one of the most electrifying players to watch. He's going to draw in a lot of attention on this Jaguars team, a team in a relatively small market that doesn't really have a lot of exciting players outside of Brian Thomas Jr. and maybe Trevor Lawrence. So I love the aggression from the Jaguars sort of front office and trying to get their guy, because clearly they love Travis Hunter. And regardless of how well he plays, I think this is a really bold move and just sets the tone for the Jaguars franchise for years to come.
Yeah, I mean, hopping in here as a Jaguars fan, I knew I had to talk about this. Even as the producer, I had to come in here and talk. When I saw that trade made on draft night, I was so happy. It addresses everything we need. We needed a cornerback so desperately, and we got him in Travis Hunter. We needed someone to be that second or even first wide receiver, behind Brian Thomas Jr. or in front of Brian Thomas Jr. We got that player. It addresses so many of our needs. And really, we didn't just trade away all those picks for one player. We traded away those picks for like a player and a half, basically. So I think it's totally worth it to actually go up for him. But here's what I'm curious about. This is what I want to hear from you guys, actually. I think that Travis Hunter should be a cornerback, should be mainly focused on a cornerback, and then be like a third down receiver. James Gladstone, our general manager, is saying that they want him to be a wide receiver and then be a corner when needed. What do you guys want him? What do you guys think he should be?
I always thought going into the draft, I thought he was or should be corner first, receiver second. I think you look at this class, this cornerback class that we had, and you can make a very strong argument that he was the best cornerback in this draft class. I think you look on the flip side, you look at the receivers. I don't think you can make an argument he was the best receiver in that draft class. I'm taking Tet McMillan, I'm taking Matthew Golden over him, at least those two guys. I think in that case, it's going to be a lot easier to run him at corner where we saw him lock receivers up in college. He has the hands to go and grab six picks a year too. So he has that receiver background playing corner. He has the route running ability, knowing what these receivers are going to do. He's going to be so effective at corner. And then I think it's much easier to design plays for him on offense and throw him in there as kind of a gadget guy on, say, a third down, say, a goal line set, than it is to throw him in on every third down that they have at corner. I think it's just much easier, much more sensible to have him corner first, receiver second.
I thought it would be more receiver first and then used sparingly as a corner. Just because I think he prefers the offensive side of things, and you're going to make more money as a receiver. So I think he naturally has a preference to play wide receiver. And we talk about making one of the most dynamic wide receiver duos, and with him and BTJ, I think, like, instantly, I think Jacksonville becomes one of the most exciting teams to watch in terms of their passing game if they play him primarily as a wide receiver. And I think cornerback is a position where you can find guys to sort of just plug in there and be decent. But I think wide receiver is one of those positions where you need star players and you need players who are going to make an impact. And I think Travis Hunter is going to make more of an impact at wide receiver.
No, and I would also say that I think Travis Hunter, I think the whole year before the draft, we probably thought that he would be a wide receiver first and cornerback second, but I've kind of changed my opinion. I think cornerback is arguably the hardest position to play in football, in my opinion. And I feel like Travis Hunter, if he's going to play both positions, he needs more energy on the defensive, especially with the Jaguars, who don't necessarily have that, I guess, cornerback one on their team. So Travis Hunter could really serve as that cornerback one to kind of not necessarily be like the leader of the defense, but be a really big help to it. And then if they need him on a third, fourth down situation in late game scenarios, they can have him out there. But I think if you're going to play Travis Hunter at one primary position, he needs to have all of his energy on cornerback, because he's got Josh Downs in his division, Alec Pierce. He's also got Tank Dell, Nico Collins. So he's definitely going to need more energy to guard those guys for the Jaguars.
The question that brings up for me, though, is kind of how much do you use him on the opposite side of the ball? Like, if you, whether you go the route that you said, Thomas, where you play him primarily as receiver and then sprinkle him in as corner, or like we said, primarily as corner and then sprinkle him at receiver, how much of a workload can one take playing both sides of the ball?
I think it's a lot easier to play two-way in college football. Not saying it's easy at all, but I just think it's physically a little bit easier. But I think in professional, it's going to be really hard to do to play both sides of the ball at a really high level for a long career. So I think if the Jaguars, if they're smart and sort of deliberate with how they use him, I think they have to limit him on really both sides of the ball and just saying, let's see what position you prefer. Let's see what position you're best at. And then eventually sort of ramp it up in terms of the workload he's getting, like in game time.
Yeah, I definitely say maybe like week one or week two, have him play equal amount of both snaps. And maybe about like week three, he could probably figure out if he wants to play wide receiver more or cornerback more. I think the Jaguars are going to leave it up to him to choose. I don't think he's going to be able to play both sides of the ball consistently for 17 games. So I think the Jaguars are probably going to let him choose what he feels that he's better at. I'm sure the coaching staff will probably, you know, look at him a lot and see, okay, the stats are better on this end of the ball, but Travis Hunter may prefer the other side. So in my opinion, I think they'll let Travis Hunter choose, but I think I'm trying to think of what I think he'll be better at cornerback just because they already have Brian Thomas Jr., who I think might take away some of that production that Travis Hunter's going to get. So I think Travis Hunter will definitely prefer cornerback, and I think the Jaguars need him at cornerback more than wide receiver.
Yeah, I mean, you know, actually, I think really for the cornerback position at least, I'm thinking I want to see him out at corner when he still has a lot of energy left and when he's not tired. The last thing I want to see is him getting absolutely dusted and letting up a touchdown because he's too tired from playing wide receiver. So I don't know. Maybe you play him at corner more at the start of the game, and then as the game goes on, he gradually transitions to that wide receiver role and plays less corner. Just so, you know, I'd much rather have a more tired wide receiver than a tired cornerback because at least as a wide receiver, you're not letting up points. So I think all you guys have great takes. I mean, I'm just so curious to see what the Jaguars are going to do with him. It's such an exciting time to be a Jaguars fan, but I really hope we don't mess this up.
I think every time you think about Travis Hunter and talk about him, it brings up even more questions. Another one came to me just a minute ago. It's if you're Liam Cohn, right, and you are in a must-win game, you're in a playoff game, are you really going to be able to justify not playing Travis Hunter both sides of the ball? Or are you going to say he needs his rest?
I think it's kind of a lose-lose situation because, like, think about it. If Travis Hunter is, like, kind of gassed, but you put him out there and he allows a big play, the media is going to say, oh, you should have taken him out. You should have kept him in. But then if Travis Hunter is resting on the bench and they end up allowing him to score regardless, they're going to say, oh, you should have put Travis Hunter. I feel like it's kind of a lose-lose situation, in my opinion, because I feel like that's just the way the media is. They'll find a way to, like, blame the Jaguars. Like, oh, you should have put him in when he wasn't in, or you should have taken him out when he wasn't out. So that's just my opinion. I think it's kind of a little bit of a lose-lose situation if they do end up blowing a lead or they do end up selling a game. So
yeah, I think it's going to be impossible for Travis Hunter to live up to this draft type of being a two-way player. I think this Jaguars roster is a long way away from contending. And so I think you're going to have to slowly ramp up Travis Hunter's usage and get him used to the physicality of just professional football. So it's going to be interesting to see, like, how Hunter is able to handle the physicality on both sides of the ball, because we see him occasionally get dusted in college football, and that's going to be something that's going to be a little bit more of a recurrence, especially if he's winded after going on a long drive as wide receiver. So I think it's definitely going to be fascinating to see how the Jaguars deploy him and how much they deploy him, especially in these first couple of seasons while they're trying to rebuild that roster.
Travis Hunter, the modern-day Deion Sanders. That's going to do it for Travis Hunter talk. Let's move on to New York football. Everyone wants to know what we think. Everyone is listening for this. We'll start with the Giants taking Abdul Carter at 3 and then going and trading back into the first round with the Texans into that 25th pick to take their guy, Jackson Dart. Do you guys think that trade back up into the first four, Jackson Dart, was the right move? Or do you think they should have waited?
No, absolutely not. I don't think – this is not to discredit Jackson Dart as a player. I think he's a fine football player who will be an average starter next year. I just don't understand that with the draft class that is coming up next year, why you'd move up back into the first round for a guy that, you know, next year is probably QB7, QB8. So Jackson Dart, in my eyes, would be like a – Bo Nix type of player in the best case scenario. And the worst case scenario, he sits behind Russell Wilson and Jameis Winston for a couple of years, and then when he finally gets to become QB1, he's just like a mediocre player.
Yeah, I honestly, so the Giants traded up from pick 34 to pick 25 to pick Jackson Dart, and I just don't think that was nearly necessary. They probably could have waited until pick 34 to get Jackson Dart, because the only QB needy team that had a pick before 34 was the Browns, and they picked the linebacker. So Jackson Dart still would have been on the board come pick 34. And I've said a lot of like things about Jackson Dart on College Gridiron, and I do apologize, but I'm looking forward to seeing Jackson Dart. I don't think he'll start. I think it's going to be Russell Wilson, but I do think Jackson Dart's going to be the QB2 in front of Jameis Winston, just because we've seen multiple bad years of Jameis Winston. So I do think it's a good pick, don't get me wrong. I just don't see why you would trade up 9 picks to get the guy that probably would have been there at pick 34. That's just the one thing that doesn't sit right with me.
For me, I kind of go back and forth with this pick a lot. I mean, I'm sitting there, see him get drafted. All the Giants fans around me are very happy. But Bradley, you said it. I mean, there was one other team that needed a quarterback. It was the Browns. And we saw them pass up on Shadur in that first round at 5. Makes you think maybe they are waiting to take one. But was Dart their guy? I mean, you also look at kind of the timeline the Giants have right now and signing Russ for 1 year and then Jameis for 2. It makes you think that Dart might be not waiting behind those guys for at least this year, if not a second year. But then at that point, looking at the quarterback class for next year, why not wait and try to go get like an Arch Manning type of guy if he's in there, or like a Sam Levitt or a Garrett Nussmeier, a lot of names in next year's draft, which make you think, was this the right pick? But then again, you look at the bright side. They went and they believe in this guy, and they went and got their guy. Again, on the bad side, we've seen a history of Ole Miss quarterbacks recently that hasn't worked out great. We look at this Lane Kiffin offense at Ole Miss, which hasn't proven to give quarterbacks NFL-ready traits as much as you would see from other schools. But then again, Eli Manning came from Ole Miss. So it's very back and forth, and I think a lot of Giants fans are, from what I've seen, very happy with this pick. It also is very reminiscent of the Daniel Jones draft.
No, 100%. And what I think, what the Giants were thinking is, there's still a lot of questions about Arch Manning, whether he wants to play an extra 2 years at Texas or declare. So I don't think the Giants really wanted to take that risk with, you know, end up passing on the quarterback in this draft and then being really, really bad, having a top 3 pick, and then Arch Manning says, oh, I'm going to go back to Texas for next year. And then you're stuck with a Drew Aller or Garrett Nussmeier, like you said. So I just think the Giants were kind of thinking now instead of, like, taking a risk in the future. And you talk about trading up. The Giants, they tried trading up for Jaden Daniels last year. That didn't work out. And then they tried trading for number one this year, and that also didn't work out. So the Giants have kind of had a history of, like, trying to trade up, and it's not working. So I just don't think the Giants wanted to take that risk next year with trying to get Arch Manning, but then him end up going back to Texas. So I like this Giants pick. I think they were definitely thinking towards the present and not for the future.
The issue in my mind is that this Giants roster is a ways from actually contending. It's not like they're a quarterback away from suddenly becoming a playoff threat. So the issue in my mind is that you're aggressive and you try to trade up to get your guy. Like, I understand. I just question whether Jackson Dart is that guy with such a loaded quarterback class coming up. And it's not just Arch Manning being that one guy and everyone else is just meh. It's just that it's incredibly loaded. We talk about Clade Klubnik. We talk about Garrick Neusmeyer from LSU. A lot of talented guys.
Even your guy, Nico.
Nico, I would... I hope no NFL team drafts him. sorry, Nico. Anyway, but I just think that with the aggressiveness, they traded the two round three picks and then obviously the second round pick. I think they just could have used those guys on actual starters and waited till next year to find their actual guy at quarterback. So that's just what concerns me about this trade. I think obviously if Jackson Dart becomes a phenomenal player, then I'm wrong. But I just don't like the aggressiveness when the guy is a little bit questionable.
No, 100%. I don't like the aggressiveness. I think they could have got him at pick 34. But think about it. Let's just say Russell Wilson gets injured in week 6, misses the rest of the season. I'd rather have Jackson Dart starting than Jameis Winston. And I think...
Really? A rookie
Jameis
in week
Winston
6?
Is the only player in NFL history to have 30 touchdowns and 30 interceptions.
He
wore
30 touchdowns.
Season.
He's
but
exciting to watch.
And 5,000 yards.
I'd rather have Jackson Dart as my starting QB than Jameis Winston in 2025.
Yeah, but I get that you'd rather have Jackson Dart, but you're still going to go 6-11, right, at the end of the day. It doesn't really matter who's at QB.
Well,
not to hate on Giants.
I don't know
anything.
Necessarily about
Giants.
Six,
I don't mind
I'd say maybe like 7-10.
Okay,
but 8-9
is bold too.
The point is that regardless of who's at quarterback for right now, the Giants are gonna have a high draft pick, and I just I think they could have waited to get their guy at quarterback in next year's draft.
Plus, Russell Wilson can mentor Jackson Dart this year. If Russell Wilson doesn't come back after this season, then who's going to mentor
Jameis Winston?
I think I'd rather have Russell Wilson mentoring my rookie quarterback than Jameis Winston. So I think there are reasons to justify why the Giants did what they did. I just don't think they should have traded it up. I still would have picked Jackson Dart to pick 34. I think he would have still been there. But I just don't understand the aggressiveness to trade all the way back up. You traded a whole 9 picks up to pick the guy that would have been there in the second round.
Well, we've talked a lot about Jackson Dart. We haven't shown any love to the number 3 overall pick, Abdul Carter.
That's my guy, Penn State.
That is your guy right there. It was interesting to see which way the Giants would go coming into this draft. A lot of people in the week leading up, but at first it was Travis Hunter, and then there was supposedly interest from the Browns in Travis, and then it was Abdul Carter was the favorite, and it ended up being Abdul Carter, and then he asked LT if he could wear 56, and he said, no, absolutely not. Go make yourself a name with another number. Bradley, you got your guy, though.
I am just incredibly happy. I was praying that Abdul Carter would fall to the 3 because I didn't know if the Browns were going to try and pair Myles Garrett and Abdul Carter. And plus, there was a whole contract situation with Myles Garrett where he said, I don't want to come back. I want to trade. And then he takes this record-breaking contract. So I'm very happy that the Giants managed to get Abdul Carter. In my opinion, I still think he's the best player in the draft. You can agree to disagree. Maybe that's me being a little bit biased, but I just want to remind you that there's been more NFL unicorns than the amount of NFL players from Penn State that have worn number 11 from Sixth City. That's all I'm going to say. You know, can call me a little bit biased, but that's just my opinion.
Micah Parsons.
No, I'm saying that there's been more NFL unicorns than members of Sixth City. So
Okay.
I just want to remind people out there, before you say Travis Hunter is more generational, just remember that little nugget. But I'm very happy with this Giants draft. I still think the Giants have one of the best drafts this year. You don't have to say the best. I think one of the best. Not the best, but they managed to get Abdul Carter. They got their QB. They managed to get some extra depth at the defensive tackle position. They got Cam Scadaboo in the 4th round, which blew my mind. I didn't think Cam Scadaboo was going to be available at pick 105. That still blows my mind. And they got an offensive guard. They got an extra tight end, and they got a cornerback. So I think Giants did a really good draft. It may not be the best, but I think it's up there in, like, top 5.
Yeah, I as much as I hate the Jackson Dart pick, I love the Abdul Carter pick. I do think he's the best player in this draft in terms of raw skill and immediate impact on this Giants roster and at one of the most premium positions in football. I think this is a fantastic pick. Great value. I was a little bit concerned as a Ravens fan that the Browns were going to get Abdul Carter to pair with Myles Garrett.
Which would have been scary.
Yeah, which is very scary despite how bad the rest of the Browns roster is. But I think the Giants knocked it out of the park just based on this pick. And, like, they could have drafted nobody with the rest of the picks, and I think they still would have had a phenomenal draft.
Yeah, well, I was on the live draft show, which covered the first 12 picks of the draft. And when I tell you everyone who was here was a Giants fan was going crazy when that pick, that would still be an understatement. They loved that Abdul pick. The Giants now arguably have one of the best, if not the best, front sevens in the NFL. However, I don't love the Giants draft past the first round as much. I think You got your guys in round one. You went and got your franchise quarterback. You went and got Abdul, who's, I agree, was probably the best player in this draft. I don't love taking Darius Alexander in round 3. I think your defensive line already is okay. I get he's a depth piece, but you add depth pieces later in the draft. I liked the Scadaboo pick in round 4. I liked Marco Zimbau in round 5, the offensive lineman. But I had questions after the draft about this Giants roster, and I get that it's not supposed to be ready to make a playoff push, but you look at it, and why didn't they go get a corner earlier? They got one at the very end of round 7. I would have liked, if I was a Giants fan, which, for the record, I'm a Cowboys fan, so I love watching. I love saying all this stuff. If I was a Giants fan, I would have went and got corner earlier in the draft. I would have went and got a receiver somewhere. I think that was also something they could improve on. They need someone who can line up across from neighbors. I don't think the tight end was necessary. I think you already have depth there. So I think finally, outside of kind of how they drafted, it makes me wonder how you're going to kind of fit that front seven when you come into week one this season. Where are you going to put Abdul Carter? Is he going to play off the ball at all? Is he going to go off the edge? Are you going to move Brian Burns off the ball? Are you going to run Kayvon Thibodeau, Dexter Lawrence, and then have Burns and Abdul Carter, kind of one of them, play almost like a defensive tackle? It leaves me with questions about how you're going to kind of move that around, especially with Kayvon Thibodeau picking up his fifth-year option.
I think that the Giants' front four is so versatile. You can play them really anywhere. You could play Abdul Carter on the edge. You could play him even as a QB spy. You could play him right up the middle. I think the Giants' front four, Dexter Lawrence, Abdul Carter, Kayvon Thibodeau, and Brian Burns is so versatile. You could really play them anywhere on a defensive line, and they could still be really, really good. And even if you want to play Darius Alexander in that front four and have Abdul Carter kind of off the ball as like a QB spy or something, I think that I do agree with you. The Giants shouldn't have taken a defensive tackle at round three. That should have maybe been a wide receiver pick or maybe a cornerback pick. Instead of waiting till pick 246 to pick a cornerback, maybe get that in round three to help, you know, that secondary, because the Giants secondary is God awful. Oh my gosh. It's atrocious to watch. It was atrocious to watch every week last year. So I think the Giants definitely, they didn't need another defensive tackle. I like Darius Alexander, but I think that the Giants could have definitely gotten Russell Wilson another wide receiver weapon besides Malik Nabers. Because especially, I feel like Malik Nabers is going to need that other wide receiver too to kind of help his workload, because Malik Nabers got most of the passes last year outside of Wandale Robinson and Darius Slayton. So I think they definitely need another wide receiver. Maybe they'll sign another one in free agency. I don't know. But that is a little questionable why they would take a defensive tackle around three.
This defense is going to be loads better just based on Abdul Carter coming in. But then just the rest of the roster just has a lot of gaping holes to it. You mentioned the wide receiver room. Running back is relatively short up with Scadaboo. I'd like that pick. But then just the rest of the draft is just like, man, it just doesn't really speak to me in any sort of way. So the Giants will be the worst team in the NL East, and that's just how it's going to be.
I agree.
No,
you think the Cowboys
who's
going to
be worse? Who are they finishing above?
Please tell me. Call me delusional. I think they could finish above the Cowboys.
That is delusional.
Yikes.
That
is absolutely delusional. I don't think it's delusional. You really trust the Cowboys to have another, you know, semi?
I trust the Cowboys to have a good year.
I think the Giants, if they outperform expectations,
The Giants win 7 games max. The Cowboys win 9 games minimum this year.
9 games minimum is a little, I don't, I think.
It's a little high.
That's a little high.
What are we going based off of?
I'd say maybe like 7 to 8 minimum for the Cowboys.
Giants max is the Cowboys minimum.
So you're saying it's like 7, 8, 9, like in that.
All right,
I'm saying if the Giants outperform, I think the Giants win projection will probably be like 6 or 7.
It's at 5.5 right now.
Okay. So if the Giants, let's just say the Giants win 7, 8 games and outperform, I think they'll finish above
Cowboys.
I think the only way the Giants finish above the Cowboys is if they have the tiebreaker over them. If they don't win the tiebreaker, then they'll finish below them. But if the Giants can somehow beat the Cowboys twice, which I don't know if that'll happen, but if they do, I'm saying, let's just hypothetically, the Giants beat Dallas twice, and I think they'll finish with the same record, but the Giants will finish above just because of the tiebreaker.
That is a very big hypothetical.
It's a very big hypothetical, but yes, that's just...
Because the Cowboys will sweep the Giants this year.
I think it can go 1-1.
I don't know.
You don't think the Giants... The Giants always have that lucky game against one of the NFC East opponents,
and
where they just go crazy
Washington.
For
it's always Washington.
I think it'll be Dallas this year. That one lucky, like...
I'll believe it when I see it.
Same here. But we're gonna shift over. We're going to stay in the Meadowlands. We're going to shift over to the Jets and look at their draft. Armon Membu at 7, they went and got Justin Fields some protection. Do you guys think that was the right pick, or do you think they should have went tight end with Tyler Warren sitting there on the board?
I would have rather them see Tyler Warren. I like the pick to try and protect Justin Fields, but we all know that Justin Fields is not the long-term answer, and I think Tyler Warren is a generational talent at the tight end position in an era where the tight ends are becoming more and more involved in the offensive, like, passing game. So I would have liked him to say Tyler Warren, although I don't hate this pick. I like it a lot because it gives them sort of a cornerstone to build off of. But I would have preferred Tyler Warren there.
Yeah, I'm just glad that they didn't pick Shedeur Sanders. That would have been crazy if they ended up picking Shedeur Sanders when they already signed Justin Fields. But I kind of agree with you. Tyler Warren's also my guy, Penn State. But I do like this pick, especially since you don't want Justin Fields scrambling 80,000 times a game because the offensive line is collapsing after 5 seconds. So, although I still think Justin Fields has some upside, I've been saying that for the past few years. I still think the Bears should have picked Marvin Harrison Jr. and kept Justin Fields because, to me, the best ability is versatility. And Justin Fields can, you know, pass a little bit, but he's also a good scrambling quarterback, and that's something that I value. So I do like this offensive tackle pick, but like you said, Tyler Warren's a generational talent at the tight end position, and I don't know. I think you could have went either way with this because although I think Justin Fields does need one more weapon besides Garrett Wilson because Devontae Adams already left, and then you got, what, Alan Lazard. Is Randall Cobb still even there? Or I don't know what's going on with
that. No, he's not.
But
he's definitely not.
Yeah, I think especially since the Jets' offensive line was pretty terrible last year, so I think getting your guy at pick 7 was also pretty good.
I love this pick, and I'm going to stand on it, and I was on it before the draft, and I'm still on it. But this Armon Membu pick, that's what I predicted for the Jets. I said this tight end class was so deep. You look at, there were probably 10 different tight ends who could have been ranked in the top 200 prospects, and they went and got one in round 2 in Mason Taylor, which I love that pick too. But the fact that it was such a deep tight end class, and you can go and get one of the top tackles in this class to go and protect your guy who you just signed with hope that he can flash some upside, I think that is the perfect pick. I think you could not have gone any other way. I think Armon Membu was the right pick 10 times out of 10. Let's go through the full Jets draft real quick. Armon Membu in round 1. They went and got Mason Taylor, tight end out of LSU, round 2. Went and got a corner, Azarrie Thomas, out of Florida State, round 3. Arian Smith, receiver out of Georgia, round 4. Along with Malachi Moore, safety from Bama in round 4. In round 5, they had two picks. Francisco Maui Goa, a linebacker from Miami, and Tyler Barron, an edge from Miami, pairing up those teammates. Looking at this overall draft, what would you grade it? How much do you like it, especially when compared to the Giants that we just looked at?
I think the first 3 rounds, in terms of what the Jets needed, I thought they did a great job drafting starter level talent to just sort of plug into these holes. But then after sort of round 4 and on, I'm shocked by how poor this Jets draft is. Arian Smith, I watched a lot of Georgia football, and he just, like, could not catch the ball to save his life. And apparently Arian Smith was going to be available as an undrafted free agent. So I'm just confused about the vision of the Jets draft strategy after round 4. So overall, I'd give it a B, just because I thought the first 3 rounds were really, really strong from them. But then it's not quite that A level. And I think it's worse than the Giants draft, just because of how the rest of the draft went for the Jets.
Yeah, I think the first 3 rounds for the Jets were A minus. You can make the argument for even A plus if you wanted to. But then round 4 and past that, I think, was arguably D. So I'd say maybe like a B minus, kind of hovering around there. I think the Jets hit it out of the park in the first 3 rounds. But then you look at Arian Smith, they probably could have even gotten Arian Smith in the 5th round. But you said undrafted free agent, which is like, you used your 4th round pick on an undrafted free agent when you could have gotten a different receiver at round 4. I'm not against that. But you could have picked someone who's better than Arian Smith. And then after the draft, you sign him as a free agent. So I'd give the Jets probably a B- for their overall draft.
I like this draft, I'm not going to lie. I think you look at this first 3 rounds, and I think you hit on all 3. You got your offensive tackle. You went and got your tight end. You need more weapons for Justin Fields. You went and got a corner who can come in and replace DJ Reed immediately. Arian Smith may be a bit of a reach, but they need a receiver there. You need to go get someone who can line up across from Garrett Wilson. You're getting Justin Fields some weapons. Malachi Moore, Francisco Malgoa, Tyler Barron, these are all going to be guys who are going to slot in and pretty much get playing time immediately, especially Tyler Barron. He will be probably that second group coming off the edge, which I think if you're going out in round five and getting someone who's going to come in and make an impact in game one, in week one, that is a win in my book. So I'm going to look at this draft, and I'm going to give them, I'd say, a B+.
Okay.
I think it was a good draft. I don't think it was great. I mean, it wasn't it's not blowing me out of the water, but at the end of the day, it's still the Jets, and they're putting together a draft like this. No shade against the Jets. Well, a little bit of shade, but anyways, we've talked Giants, we've talked Jets, but one person who fell a lot in this draft, Shedeur Sanders, fell to round five, the sixth pick in round five, actually, 144th overall to the Browns. But he was the second quarterback the Browns took. They took Dillon Gabriel in round three. There were reports that Shedeur was unserious in interviews. I've also seen rumors that some coaches didn't want to draft him in fear of Deion coming in and taking their job in the next couple of years. He was prank called during the draft by Falcons defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich's 21-year-old son, who got his number off an iPad that was left unlocked in the house. A lot of controversy around Shedeur Sanders. I want to start with his on-the-field stuff. Do you think he was really a fifth-round pick talent, or do you think he should have gone earlier?
You can go.
He's a phenomenal player, at least on the field. You can ignore, if you just look at him in a vacuum where you're just looking at on the field stuff, he has the pinpoint accuracy. He has the sort of playmaking ability to be a first round draft pick. But then the only issue, really downside, was that sometimes, especially in that BYU game, he would sort of just try to do too much with it instead of just throwing it out and taking an incomplete pass, where he tried to create too much. But that's something I think you can fix, especially as you're sort of drilling down into him during the offseason. So talent-wise, he's a first-round draft pick.
Arguable. This might be a hot take. I would probably take Jalen Milroe over Shedeur Sanders just because...
With the hand size, too?
Just, wow. No, listen. I've said this earlier. The best ability, in my opinion, is versatility. And Jalen Milroe can do a little bit more scrambling than Shedeur Sanders. So that's where I'm coming from.
Jalen Milroe can't throw the ball.
No, but I'm saying... But hear me out.
It's quarterback. It's not running back.
I know, but I'm saying, like, look at, like, a Lamar Jackson or a Justin Fields. That's why I think it's very close between Jalen Milroe.
They can throw in college, though.
No, but I'm just saying, I think... The best ability is versatility. Maybe a hot take to you guys, but in my opinion, I think it's very, very close. I think passing-wise, obviously, Shedeur is miles better. I don't think that's a debate. But I also value QBs that are versatile, like a Jalen Milroe. I'm not saying that Jalen Milroe should be taking 20 picks ahead of Shedeur Sanders, but I think maybe if it's like picks 25 and 26 and both those teams need a quarterback, I'd probably take Jalen Milroe over Shedeur Sanders, but I still think Shedeur Sanders is a first-round talent. I just think I would, if I'm...
So Jalen Milroe is a first-round talent?
I think in this QB class, you could make the argument because of how weak it was. Like, if we're talking about last year, Jalen Milroe was probably the seventh best quarterback last year, but I think looking at this year, it's just Cam Ward and everybody else. So that's just my take. I still think Shedeur Sanders should have been a first-round pick, but at the same time, or are we going to get into the off-the-field stuff?
Yeah.
All right,
yeah,
then
will.
I'll let you take it.
I half agree. I think he was definitely more talented than the round he went in. I think that is a no-brainer for me. I personally think he was kind of a fringe round one, round two kind of guy. I think he could have gone anywhere in, take your average draft, I think he goes anywhere from 24 to 40, I think, is a range that Shedeur should have gone in. And there were teams that had picks there. There were teams that have picks there, which is why it was kind of interesting to see him not go off the board. But I definitely think he, talent-wise, was there. But obviously, I don't think the talent was why he dropped. It had a lot to do with his off-the-field stuff. I mentioned it earlier. Reports of him being unserious in interviews with these teams. Maybe coaches feared Deion coming in and swiping their jobs. Maybe they didn't want that Deion presence as his dad around their franchise. Do you guys think that was the case? You think that was kind of what happened? Our team's going to regret passing on him? Bradley, I'll toss it to you first.
I think I'm a little conflicted on this because part of me feels like it's Shedeur Sanders' fault for him botching interviews with teams that didn't want to draft him. So that's on him for being, you know, entitled and disrespectful to certain teams. But at the same time, part of me feels like that's not really fair to Shedeur Sanders to first off be prank called in the first round saying, oh, we're going to pick you. I'm the Saints GM. You're getting picked off the board. And then him falling four rounds later. That, to me, isn't fair. Like, if I'm D.R. Sanders, that was my kid, I would be upset as well. And I do think it was more off-the-field stuff than on-the-field. Because I think on-the-field, he's a first-round talent, I think, or maybe, like, late first-round, early second. I think we can all agree with that. But I think it was way more off-the-field stuff, like you said, Deion Sanders being his dad and kind of, like, taking the spotlight, you know, from maybe other players on the team and maybe Shedeur Sanders wanting to be, I guess, the leader of a team. And I guess maybe GMs and coaches kind of feared that. So do I think Shedeur Sanders should have been in round five? No, I think he's a lot better than round five. I was surprised that the Saints didn't pick him. I'm surprised they picked
Tyler Shuck over Shedeur.
I literally did not hear of Tyler Shuck at all the entire season until the leading up to the draft.
The only film I've seen on Tyler Shuck is the combine pass, where he's turning it and then he just throws it
the
like
sidearm that goes straight into the ground 8 yards ahead of the receiver.
Granted, I know he's a better player than that, but like, that's a little ridiculous. I think Shedeur made a couple of key mistakes approaching this draft process. I think he took it for granted that he was going to be taken in the first round just based off his talent. And so, like you mentioned, he didn't take the interviews as seriously. I think there was times where teams would show him like plays where he would make the wrong decision, and then he just did not take to that very well. He didn't like being criticized that way, which is just a little bit is understandable from sort of the team point of view. Like, I wouldn't want that attitude on my team. And then he didn't hire an agent. He just let his dad sort of carry the whole thing. And so, like you mentioned, where coaches were scared that Deion was going to take their job, I think that's understandable considering how much of a presence Deion had in Shador's sort of entire draft process, entire college process, where Deion was there for every little step of the way. I think being drafted in the fifth round, being underestimated, is the best thing that could have happened to Shedeur, just because all of that arrogant personality, whether true or not, that's what his perception is. And from now, he's got to battle his way through the Cleveland Browns quarterback room. And as a fifth-round draft pick, he's got to make a name for himself in order to sort of get a contract. So I think this is an ideal scenario for Shedeur. He's got a bit of a chip on his shoulder, and I think he has enough talent to really impress people.
I don't know if you guys have seen the movie Draft Day, but he reminds me a lot of Bo Callahan. Lying about the $100 bill. Nobody showed up to his birthday party, that type of stuff. I think Shedeur,
that's a perfect comparison.
His attitude, his ego, his cockiness kind of got in the way of him going about, like you said, Thomas, the draft process the right way and his college process the right way. And he kind of took all that for... He kind of took advantage of all that and took it all for granted. But he ends up going round 5, 6th pick, 144 overall to a loaded QB room in Cleveland. I say loaded. It's not loaded with talent. It's loaded with names.
Yeah.
Joe Flacco, Kenny Pickett, Dylan Gabriel, Shedeur Sanders. One of them will go. At least one of them will go before the season. But a lot of competition there. I want to take a look. I want to zoom out a little bit and take a look at who we think had the best overall draft. And I'll go first. I loved the Panthers draft. I think the pick at 8 with Tet McMillan, I think that was the perfect fit, the perfect pick. I think they needed a receiver. And then you go down the list. Nick Skorton in round 2, I think, was a phenomenal pick. Princely Umanmielian, however you pronounce the name, I'm sorry. But go in and get another guy that can go off the edge, two edge rushers in a row to kind of shore up that defensive line. You went and got Trevor Etienne out of Georgia, which I think was a great pick, a great value pick. You have Rico Dowdle coming in, but you have Jonathan Brooks, who tore his second ACL last season, so a little uncertainty there. You also have Chuba Hubbard, so he's going to be a good depth piece there. But then they round out the defense and finally take Jimmy Horn in round six, another receiver. Their receiver room coming into this draft was Xavier Leggett and nobody. And then they went and they grabbed two guys in this draft. They signed Hunter Renfro. They made a lot of big moves, and I think this Panthers draft was great. Thomas, who was your best draft?
I'm between two teams. I'm between the Patriots draft, which I thought committed really well to protecting Drake May. But then I also really loved the Chicago Bears draft. And I could see you grimacing over there already. I love Colston Loveland. I think he was right up there with best tight end in the draft. And I think between him and Tyler Warren, I think it was just came down to preference for Ben Johnson. And I trust Ben Johnson as a play caller to maximize Loveland as a talent, similar to what he did with Sam Laporta. And I also love Luther Burden III, who was highly touted coming into college, was supposed to be sort of a round one draft pick, but then last season was a little bit shaky. But I just love them surrounding Caleb Williams with weapons. There's really no excuses left for Caleb Williams. So this is really almost a do or die season for Caleb. Anyway, I just love the draft. I think they knocked it out of the park in terms of getting talent and also filling needs that the team had.
I'll take the other one that you were thinking. I think the Patriots, just because they filled so many holes with that sinking ship team, I just think that I think Drake May is going to be a lot better this year now that he actually has a reliable O-line this year. I am really happy with this Patriots draft class. I didn't want to say the Giants just so it doesn't look biased on my part, but I really think that the Patriots knocked it out of the park with the draft. They managed to get Will Campbell. They got Travion Henderson, which I think he's a great one running back, one of the best running backs this past college football season. And they got some extra depth at wide receiver. They also got a new center, some safeties. And they also got a new kicker in round six, which is also pretty cool to see. You don't really see a lot of kickers taking the draft, so that must have been pretty cool for him to get his name called. But I think the Patriots are going to – I said this, I think, at the start of – last year. I think the Patriots rebuild is going really, really well so far. I think maybe not this year, but next year, I think we could definitely see him in that 4-5 seed in the playoffs. Call that a hot take, but I think the Patriots got something going on down there.
I do think that's a hot take. We're gonna look at the flip side here. Worst draft in your opinion. And Bradley, I'll throw it to you first. I'll go last here. Who do you think had the worst draft?
I feel like, honestly, I think the Bengals could maybe be up there because, you know, with Trey Hendrickson obviously probably going to be holding out this year. No matter how many players the Bengals could have drafted on defense, nobody is going to be able to replace Trey Hendrickson, arguably who he should have been the defensive player of the year last year. And they also took a running back in round six, which was kind of weird to me. They already have Zach Moss and they have Chase Brown. And then they have Taj Brooks, which the Bengals draft just kind of confused me a little bit. I get it, I guess in case Zach Moss, you know, he has an injury history, but I just think the Bengals automatically for me are one of those like weird drafts because they're probably not going to pay Trey Hendrickson. He's going to go, and I think no matter who the Bengals drafted, there's just no way you can replace someone like Trey Hendrickson, who, in my opinion, is the best defensive player in the NFL, in my opinion. But I'd probably say the Bengals. I'd probably give the Bengals maybe a C-, honestly.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's a team in this draft who had a horrific draft. I thought everyone had sort of – there were obviously drafts that were better than others. And one of the drafts that I felt sort of questionable on was the Falcons, just because I loved the Jalen Walker pick at 15. I thought he was a little bit undervalued at that point. But then trading up to get James Pierce Jr., who I've watched – countless hours of tape on, he's really not that good. I'm not sure why they paid such a heavy price to go get that guy. And then the rest of the draft is sort of just like, you know, mediocre. So in a draft where a lot of people were making a lot of the right picks, I thought the Falcons made one of the sort of few mistakes in this draft by being so aggressive to get a guy that is really not that good in James Pierce Jr.
My worst draft, and Thomas, you're going to love this, is the Bears, actually.
Wow.
Your
best,
the worst?
Okay.
Your
best,
I don't know
draft
about that
is
one.
My worst. I don't think they really went position of need. I think you look at round one, and I don't see tight end as a big need for them.
Yeah, I mean, they have Cole Kmet. That
Cole Kmet is a great tight end. But then even at that, I think they go second best tight end in the draft. You pass up on Tyler Warren for Colson Loveland. I don't like that. I don't think you need a receiver at all. You have Adunze who's supposed to come and be that number two this year. You have DJ Moore, and then you go and take your round two pick and go grab Luther Burden, who is a great receiver, but I don't think you need receiver there. And then you go your second round two pick, offensive line, who you just traded for three different guys in the offseason. I don't think offensive line in the draft should have been as high of a priority. I think you as the Bears should have been targeting, go grab a secondary guy, go grab a backer, go grab someone who can come off the edge. I think those were their three big things, and they didn't accomplish any of that until round four, which is just, you look at the talent and who was available, and they definitely could have, but I feel like for their first four picks, which they had one first rounder and three second rounders, I think for every single pick, they should have went a different way. And for that reason, I'm taking the Bears as the worst draft. I want to do one more thing before we wrap up. I want to get you guys' best non-round one pick. So anyone who you think was undervalued, best value picks, you think was just a player who was valued correctly but picked to a team that he's going to come in and make an immediate impact and fit so well. And I'll go first, and I'm going to let my bias shine through with the Cowboys. Donovan Ezeraku, who was picked 44th overall, was a top 30 talent in this draft, an edge rusher out of BC, I think was great. And then I was between him and Siobhan Revel, another Cowboys player, a cornerback from East Carolina. We got him at 76. He was also a first-round grade. Those two picks, I think they were actually, I can't remember who, but one NFL insider came out and with the best five value picks from day two, and both of those guys were on that list. So those are my guys. Thomas, it looks like you're ready.
I think my guy is from what Bradley said was the best draft class, and I think that is the Patriots. I thought they got a really good guy in Kyle Williams. They needed another wide receiver, and considering how badly they did last draft class and addressing the receiver room, they passed up Ladd McConkey, who looks to be a phenomenal player for the Chargers. I thought they got a guy who was going to be that sort of similar guy for the Patriots, and it just really just illustrates, outside of Will Campbell, a commitment to Drake May as this cornerstone of the Patriots franchise for years to come. A lot of times you see teams sort of ignore their quarterback just because, you know, they have some years to come, or like they just have a lot of time to grow. He's on a rookie deal. But I thought the Patriots did a really good job addressing what needed to change, especially on the offensive side of the ball. And I love Kyle Williams. The tape on him looks fantastic. He's not the most athletic guy. He's not the fastest guy, but he's got really good hands. His route running is exquisite, and he looks to be a really good weapon for Drake May.
I'm going to give you a Penn State guy because I have to shout out my Penn State guys, and I'll give you another player. So I think Will Johnson fell really, really far. He was picked 47. There were some draft boards that I saw that had him inside the top seven even, and he fell all the way to 47, and the Cardinals picked him. I love this pick for the Cardinals. I think they're adding more pieces to that secondary after, you know, they weren't really too good last year. So although surprising Penn State fan talking good about a Michigan player, I'm really surprised that Will Johnson fell this far. I know he had the medical issues, which is why he fell that far, but I still think he should have been a first-round pick. I think pick 47 for Will Johnson was a huge steal, and also same thing with Mike Green as well. That was another player I was thinking about. He was the fifth-ranked edge rusher, and he went pick 59 to the Ravens, which I don't understand how he managed to fall to the Ravens. It's like the Eagles and the Ravens always get those really, really good defensive players that always just fall in the draft for no reason. And you look at all these other NFL teams, like, why are you letting the Ravens and the Eagles do this every single year? And it's just annoying to me. And obviously, I have to shout out Kevin Winston Jr., who was the third-ranked safety in this class, but he tore his ACL. I believe it was week one, so he missed the entire year, so that's why he fell to pick 82. and he did go to the Titans. So I'm excited to see the Titans here, not because of Cam, not only because of Cam Ward, but because of Kevin Winston Jr. So I'm very excited to see the Titans, especially, and I'm also excited to see the the Cardinals, obviously, because of Will Johnson.
Yeah, both picks you just mentioned, Will Johnson and Mike Green, fell in the draft because the off-the-field issues or injuries in Will Johnson's case. And in my mind, the best ability is availability. You said it was versatility. I think it's undoubtedly availability. So I think time will tell whether Will Johnson can stay on the field and whether Mike Green will be able to see the field because of off-the-field issues. So I like those picks in terms of value, in terms of talent. But it only time will tell to see if those guys can actually make an impact for those teams.
Only time will tell, but we would love to talk football all day, but unfortunately that is going to do it from the Bronx. If you're a Giants fan, you got your guys in the first round. If you're a Jets fan, I think you should be happy with your draft. Trey Rodriguez was behind the glass today. Bobby Chaffardini is the sports director of WFUV. For Bradley Byrne and Thomas Tisdale, I'm Brendan Shorey saying so long. See you in a couple months. The countdown to week one starts now. NFL Friday is a production of WFUV Sports.